Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Another great show for you this week. Ken and Reggie both in studio. Stephen O'Brien back on the phone giving us an update on the NFL as that season kicks off. Will Slattery joined us to talk rugby. Him and Reggie had a good chat about the URC going to Qatar. In Gaelic Games, Declan Drake and Sean Lane took over with a big roundup of the latest news around the capital. And finally, in football, the one and only Alan Cawley gave us the latest on the League of Ireland. Download now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Ken, so it's been a busy enough week, but I suppose yesterday's news and the Queen passing away has put some kind of change on how the weekend sporting events are going to look.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, very sad, isn't it? You know, great, amazing rain and, yeah, a lot of sport, particularly the football, has all been cancelled. The golf is still going ahead. There was one day, so it's been reduced to 54 holes. But, yeah, a lot of the sport over the weekend, particularly all the football matches in the Premiership and stuff, is all postponed until another time.
Yeah, well, of course, it's 10 or 12 days of mourning, so it'll be interesting to see just how long it is cancelled for. But I suppose she had such a big part to play in certain sports, like horse racing. You'd expect those industries to shut down, all right. But yeah. I'd say there'd be a few people kind of going, did they really have to shut down the soccer, the football?
Well, there's a great article in the paper from Martin Samuel here in the Mail, and it's about, like, you know, saying, well, he should let the football, let all these sports go ahead and sort of let the people mourn her and honour her, you know, which I think might have been better. But anyway, it's just one of those arguments. Yeah. So there's a funny story about, I got a couple of funny stories about the Queen. One is Steve Davis when he was getting his first MBE, you know, he goes to meet the Queen and, you know, he's told, like, when she pushes him, you know, with the hand, that's it, he has to move on, you know, they exchange a few little words. So he goes in to get his MBE and she says, oh, Steve, you were playing in the final on Sunday. I was watching it. I had to go to bed. How did you do? You know, oh, he says, I won, ma'am. Oh, congratulations. Push. And then he's gone, right? And then he goes back. He goes back about 10 years later for his OBE, right? Yeah. And again, comes up to him, Mr. Davis, are you still playing? Yes, ma'am. Push. Good luck.
Good luck. You know? That's the end of you. At least you remembered his name.
I know. I brought when the Queen and Prince Philip came to Dublin here in the conference centre, and I brought my mum along because I know she loved the Queen, adored the Queen, always had her on, and particularly at Christmas time for a speech and that, you know.
Yeah.
So I brought her along, but we had to, when she came into the conference centre and up on the stage and everything, and my mother was up clapping like a seal. She was so happy to be in the same room as her. But we were, as sports people, we were brought upstairs to actually meet, but I couldn't bring the mother up, you know, she had to stay downstairs. And Prince Philip came up by our side of the room. I was with Christy O'Connor, Eddie Jordan, and a few more. Keith Wood was there with us. And the Queen came up the other side. So we met Prince Philip and shook his hand and exchanged a few pleasantries. And my mother was downstairs. She was cracking up that she couldn't come up, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm chatting away upstairs to the boys. It's just telling, exchanging stories. Next of all, I get a tap on the shoulder. It's one of the senior detectives. You know, he's got the gun in the inside pocket. Yeah. He goes, Mr. Doherty, can I have a word? I says, yeah, what's wrong? Your mother's waiting for you downstairs. If you don't hurry up, she's going to leave without you.
Yeah, the real queen wanted to get moving. I heard a story yesterday. AP McCoy was on RTE, told a good story about when he first met her, and you know, there's all the protocol and you're not really knowing what you're supposed to do to do, and don't speak to her unless she speaks to you and everything else. But she's such a big horse racing fan, of course she knew who AP McCoy was, and he said, you know, I was real nervous going over, and I sat down and I was waiting, and I kind of, you know, she engaged me in conversation, so you answer her questions about the horse. She's really interested in it and she wanted to know about training techniques and everything else. But he said, I was kind of conscious of the fact that I was there for a little bit, so I got up to leave thinking, you know, not to take up too much of her time, and she turned around and she said, have you somewhere better to be, Mr. McCoy? I said, oh, sorry, ma'am, I need to sit down again. It was a great story. It was really fun.
But she seemed to be the right character.
You know, whatever people's views are, I think she changed a lot of people's minds or views when she came over to Ireland that time with the visit, the state visit that she did, and certainly a lot of Irish people seemed to warm more after that. I don't know how it's going to be now. A lot of people think this could be the end of it all, you know, gone. She was the last thing holding it all together because the rest of them seem to be a bit of a mess. So it'll be interesting to see what way the monarchy go. But as long as it doesn't keep cancelling matches.
No. What are we going to do without the football this week? You know,
well, I could have done without the football last week. United getting the one over on us against Arsenal. I couldn't believe it. Could have done with that one being postponed. Done. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a great match. I think, actually, I don't know how you feel about that. You know, the disallowed goal, the Martinelli goal, because it was a soft one. The free kick, but it was definitely I think it was a free kick because he sort of pushed him without actually touching the ball, like, you know.
I wouldn't be overly worried about that, like, these things happen in a match. I just was a bit disappointed that we didn't create more and we didn't sort of push through a bit more, because going into the game I was very confident that we were the better team and that we would get the result. But in fairness to United, they've come good.
The last four games. Since that horrendous show against Brentford when they lost 4-0, they've beaten Liverpool, now beaten Arsenal, got some good wins, you know, as well against Leicester and Southampton. So, they're on a bit of a roll, but they were brought firmly back down to earth on Thursday night against Real Sociedad. But hopefully that's because it's Europa and new players coming back into the team, giving different lads a chance. Hopefully that doesn't take too much of effect. They would have been playing Palace this weekend, but that's going to be postponed probably for another time. And hopefully they can keep going.
I think Ten Hag definitely seems to have the right attitude out of a certain amount of the players. And I suppose he's probably going to be given the time, which is good. I think he's the best man for the job. For the job. Like what they're trying to do, the way they're trying to play. I suppose against Real Sociedad, people will point at maybe Maguire and Ronaldo and a few other players and ask questions again. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the January transfer window. I don't know what. I think it's just terrible seeing Ronaldo and the legacy that he has being diminished the way it is and being reduced.
I think the fact that he hasn't had any pre-season is sort of showing a little bit. Yeah. But I think, and that's why he hasn't been starting. But I think he'll come good. I think he's still very, very fit. I mean, you know, for a 37 or is he 38?
He's incredibly 36, fit. Wonder if he can keep pace with what's around him. You know, he can pop up and score a goal. But when you compare him maybe to other strikers and the younger strikers,
and when he can impress and last in the Premiership, because very demanding as well. But I know, I still think he's got another good season in him anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see.
Let's wait and see.
Yeah, so what we're going to do this weekend with no football to look forward to, but there'll be plenty of other things, I suppose, that we'll try and look at.
The golf is going to be pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. I see Lowry is in the second round, 6 under par, 2 shots off the leading trio, so he's going well. And Rory tees off 4 under, so continuing on the good, rich vein of form that he's had. So golf will occupy us a fair bit, I suppose.
Well, that's 3 rounds now, isn't it? It's reduced to 54 holes. So Larry is actually in a really, really good position. He's only 2 off the lead. So, he's playing really... It was very tetchy, wasn't it? Did you see some of the interviews?
Didn't, no.
Oh, with McIlroy and even Larry, you know, saying, like, the teeing up. They're sort of really annoyed that some of those LIV players have gone to the... have gone to Wentworth, whereas like in the past they would never have gone, but now they're chasing ranking points to keep their ranking up high enough so they will be automatic in some of the majors. So the likes of Rory and Larry and a few more are sort of really annoyed, and I almost use that like, I'm sick that they're going to be here, you know. So the language was quite vociferous and it seemed very, very, there's sort of, it seems to be like a real divide between the LIV and the players who have shown allegiance to the PGA Tour, that, you know, it's us and them type of thing, you know. And I think Rory has been, you know, at the forefront of most of that.
He's leading the charge.
Yeah.
And in the women's golf, Leona Maguire, she's just six shots off the lead. Her form, her consistency is absolutely incredible at the moment. It's good to see Stephanie Meadow as well. She made the cut by 2 strokes as well. So she's starting to get a bit of form back as well. But Leona, just, she's constantly up around that top 10 position, really, week in, week out. It's quite incredible.
It's not easy to do, is it?
No, absolutely not. It's unreal. quite amazing. Funny there you mentioned the LIV Golf. I'm going to be talking to Will Slattery in the rugby section. I'm really looking forward to having a chat with Will about this. There was an announcement made there during the weekend that the URC have done a sponsorship deal with Qatar Airlines. And it's raised a lot of eyebrows because basically Qatar Airlines are Qatar. You know, they're owned by the Qatar government.
So family,
It's... fingers are being pointed. Questions were raised at the press conference about rugby now going down the avenue of taking money from, you know, these regimes that are seen to be very bad. And I think it, personally, I think it creates a terrible image for the game. So really looking forward to talking to Will about that and getting his idea in it, because you start with one tournament. And you kind of go, right, okay, well, how is it all right to accept sponsorship from that when we know the background and everything else? They're trying, like, the reasons that came out was a bit like the golfers when they came out and they said they weren't taking it for the money, they were doing it for the good of the sport and blah, blah, blah. What the chief executive of the URC came out and said was that the Qatar government, they want to... invoke some of the values of rugby and use rugby as a showcase to show how those values can be transferred into society. And I was very wishy-washy. sounded like, you know...
It's a real politician's answer, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it was also like, he said, well, it's not Qatar, it's the Qatar Airlines. But it's the same thing, like, you know. Very odd. But, yeah, I'll be talking to Will Slattery about
that. So they're going to be staging matches over that side of the...
Yeah, so they're talking about having pre-seasons in Dubai or places like that. I don't know exactly the venues, but they have been talking about doing that with a view to maybe in time, like, you know, because there's South African teams now in the URC, so it could be a halfway stop point if they have URC games, you know, in that situation.
Well, they won't be short of stadiums over there, will they, after the World Cup?
For sure. You might have a job filling them for a URC match. You know, Benetton takes on the Stormers. I don't see that one selling out too handy. They probably fit them all in the dugouts. It's just interesting, you know, to see, again, another example of this sport washing that they call it, or money being filtered through various different sports. And up to now, rugby had kind of been exempt from it. We've seen it in golf. We've seen examples of it with football in the past where teams are getting bought up and in the Premiership with big money. And now rugby is obviously the next target. So where that goes is very interesting, I have to say.
Yeah, and where will that filter down to as well? You know, will be interesting.
Time for football now, that I'd be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley, Declan Drake in studio as well. Hello, Alan. How are you today?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
Going great. Not a bother. Was a bit disappointed last week, I won't lie, but we'll get to the Arsenal game a little later on. First of all, got to talk about last night and good result for Sligo Rovers against Shelburne. 2-0 winners.
Yeah, good result for Sligo. Disappointing for Shelburne, to be honest, which have been very up and down all season. Hasn't been great at all, but I think we said at the start of the year, in terms of Damien Duff coming in and trying to establish a new team in the division with the amount of players he brought in, it's just about establishing yourself back in the Premier Division, I think, to be fair to him. But there is a good budget there, and I suppose people will argue, should he be doing better? But it's a disappointing result to lose 2-0 at home to Sligo. Sligo have been very up and down themselves, to be honest with you, Reggie, but the last two or three weeks they've done quite well in the league, even though they had the game, the 3 points taken away from them during the week, with Dundalk awarded the 3 points for them feeling an ineligible player. So that would have been a bit of a blow to them, but they responded in the right manner last night. That's a good win.
Yeah, and despite the passing of the Queen across the water, the Derry match went ahead last night and they got a 1-0 victory over Bowes.
Yeah, I'm up here at the moment, Reggie. We were covering the game and it wasn't a great game, but I think, to be fair, it was all about just getting 3 points, because Derry City are breathing down the neck of Shamrock Rovers and trying to put pressure on them, and it was important that they got the 3 points by hook or by crook, and they did that last night. As I said, they didn't play great. There was a long stoppage in the first half for a really nasty injury to Kieran Cole, and from what I'm hearing this morning, he seems to be responding well to treatment and he's doing good, so hopefully he's fine. But the game was stopped for, I think, they got to 15 minutes, and that really hampered the first half, because the life was just sucked out of the game, really, in the atmosphere in the Brandywell. But then second half to come out, it was a little bit better. Bowes had a goal in the second half, couple of chances, big save from Brian Maher, but it was a wonder goal that won it for Michael Duffy. I'm not sure if you saw it, Reggie, but it was absolutely incredible, and it was a moment of magic that Derry needed. And they're only 1 point behind Shamrock Rovers now. I know they've played two games extra, but as I say, they're putting real pressure on Shamrock Rovers, and it's good for us that want to see a title race, because with Shamrock Rovers' schedule, and I think I said it to you last week, with the schedule they have facing them now, going Thursday, Sunday, from now until the end of the season, it's going to be really difficult. So I think Derry are in with a really good chance.
Dundalk slipped up very badly though last night, you know. Great for UCD, another fighting off the bottom of that table. But a 3-2 victory for them at home against Dundalk. Dundalk would have been right up into second place if they'd gotten that victory last night. So that's a big blow for them.
Oh, it's a massive blow, Reggie, especially when they got the boost during the week of being awarded those 3 points that they lost when they lost the game to Sligo. So you would have think that would have been giving them a pep in their step going in against UCD, who we know are obviously a young team down the bottom as well, fighting for their lives. And they were 2-1 up, and for them to lose 3-2, it's not only a major blow, it's really disappointing from Dundalk's point of view, because they shouldn't be losing that, full-time professionals as well. I'm sure Stevie O'Donnell was fuming. And usually the fact that they could have been up there with Derry as well, and also breathing down the neck of Shamrock Rovers, it's a massive opportunity missed. So and they've done something similar earlier in the season against UCD as well, so it's really, really poor. But a good win for UCD.
Yeah, I was listening to Dundalk's manager there, Alan, after that loss, and he sort of more or less resigned himself that he's out of title race, and they were sort of concentrating more on the cup run.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Ken, that himself and Rory Higgins, I know they're saying that in public, but behind the scenes, they would have been absolutely thinking they're in with a chance. But you have to do your own business, even though the game's extra played or whatever, you have to get the points on the board. And to lose, whatever about losing to maybe one of your rivals, but to lose to UCD like that, and you're winning 2-1 as well, it's a major blow, because if they did win, they would have been in a similar position. They would have been ahead of Derry. And it's just a major, major blow.
Alan, could I just ask you, what was your take on the unsavoury chanting from Shamrock Rovers fans on Thursday night? I thought it was very, distasteful.
Yeah, I only saw clips the odd thing online, Ken.
Yeah.
But look, football fans will be football fans, I suppose, and the country that we live in and stuff that's gone on historically and all that kind of stuff. But it's the same. I've seen even stuff online in England as well. So it's not just maybe here. And unfortunately, the world we live in, you're going to have people that maybe do things like that. I would be of the view, if you've nothing good to say, don't say anything at all. Just kind of leave it go. You could easily just kind of show your respect in that manner, I suppose. But if you don't want to show your respect, you don't need to, to say anything either. So I don't know. It's football fans being football fans, I suppose, Ken.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, across the water, things have been disrupted this week with the news and the passing of the Queen. As they say, you just don't know what's going to happen in football. And the big shock during the week was, of course, the Thomas Tuchel, Tuchel sacking on Wednesday morning. I know they were under pressure, but it still felt like a bit of a bolt from the blue that he would be sacked.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, Reggie, to be honest with you, when I saw the news. I know they've had an iffy start. And if you listen to him in his after-match interviews, all didn't seem well, but I still didn't think the sack was coming. And I was shocked, really. But the more I've heard from the owner and the plans and bringing in Graham Potter, the more I kind of think, well, at least there might be a plan in place. Now, whether that's the case, like they're going back saying that they pinpointed Potter 2-3 months ago and stuff like that, and this is their plan in terms of integrating the whole club as one, whereas Tuchel was only focusing maybe on the first team and results, but they want to build sort of an academy set up and all that. Well, obviously there is an academy set up, but they want to, the manager to be heavily involved in that and bringing young players through and all that kind of stuff. If that's the case, and it's a holistic view from a first team manager's point of view, I think Potter is a great appointment. I think he's a good appointment anyway. But in terms of Tuchel, I was shocked as well, I have to say. Right?
I mean, when you consider the experience about managers, particularly, on the big stage of Champions League that Tuchel has already won. I mean, the World Club champions as well, Chelsea. I mean, he's brought a lot of success in his short tenure. Surely, I know he was quite sort of damning of his team and stuff like that. And I think once you go down that road, it can be curtains for managers. But still, his experience, Alan, compared to Graham Potter's, there's a gulf in class there.
Absolutely, Ken. And when you think of the job that he has done at Chelsea, as you outlined there, the things they've won, he's been absolutely brilliant. And Chelsea probably isn't the easiest job to manage either, when you know as a manager the way they've been trigger happy with the manager, I suppose, over the years. But he's done such a brilliant job, and you would think he's bought a little bit of credit in the bank in terms of if things are a little bit sticky. But I suppose once a new owner comes in and he's putting the money in and serious money, he wants to make his own decisions. And I thought there was a little bit of that where, is it a chairman getting too heavily involved here and wanting to basically treat it like a toy almost? Then I've heard, obviously, their plans with Potter, and I'm a little bit more kind of thinking, well, if that's the case, I can kind of get that and understand as well. But there's no comparison in terms of, as you say, the CV of what Tuchel has done compared to Bob Potter. But I do think Potter's a brilliant manager.
And yeah, I do as well,
We'll find out now, Ken, I suppose,
how good he is.
When he's worked so hard to get this opportunity. Now he has the opportunity with one of the big teams, and we'll see exactly how good he is.
I find it amazing. 6 games in, you think you're starting you're starting off your season, you're getting ready to go, and you're out in your ear. Just unbelievable, the football, the way it works. Ten Hag, they did a great job.
They won't be sacking Ten Hag, and anyway, that's for sure.
We were giving him a hard time at the beginning, and but everything was going. But he certainly seems to have been in the right place now, and they're going well in the league. And that was a great win against my Arsenal last week.
Yeah, it was a great win, Reggie, and I thought Arsenal were very good, I have to say, and we spoke last week, and I thought Arsenal were the favourites going into the game, and that's kind of the way the game transpired as well. They dominated for large spells, but unfortunately, just when you think Arsenal have a crack, they show a weakness to them, and when they were dominating the game, they get caught on the counter-attack so easily the way they did, and once the third goal went in, I think that was game over.
Once you predicted, Alan, Arsenal were going to win last week, that was it. It was all downhill from there. For poor El Arteta and his team.
And it did. United, there's still loads of room for improvement. I'm sure Ten Hag is aware of that. You see the result during the week when he brought in a lot of the fringe players, and the squad depth just isn't there to make changes the way he did, I suppose, in the game. And he's getting to realise that and see that now. But certainly the 11 that he's picking at the moment in the league are picking up results, and there's a resilience about them and a toughness that maybe wasn't there in the last 18 months, 2 years, because that would have been a game that definitely would have lost with Arsenal dominating so well in recent times. But they showed a different side to them and got the victory, and it was a great victory, to be fair.
Do you think all of the talk and the Glazers out and all that kind of stuff, if they get a top four finish, will that all go out the window again? It'll be business as usual and everyone's happy in Manchester?
I don't think that'll ever go away until they're gone, to be honest. There's too much kind of hostility built up towards them owners. Now, I think the blow has been softened by bringing in maybe Casemiro and showing that they've brought in a couple of players and spent money and Anthony and the big money. But whilst things are okay on the pitch with them winning matches, Reggie, you'll hear it'll dampen down a little bit. But if they were to start losing and going on anything like the run, I think that'll be ramped up again. But I don't think it'll ever go away until they're gone.
Okay, and I have to mention before you go as well, great result for the women's team on, was it Tuesday that they played that 1-0 result as well? So they have Scotland or Austria, is that right?
Yeah.
Scotland or Austria now in the playoff, and they probably would have taken that as well, Reggie, when you look at the draw. Yeah. I know they're higher ranked in the rankings, both those teams, but there's not much between them, to be fair, and I think they would have taken that. Vera Pauw, she's done a great job to get them into the position that they are right now. They got their business done on Tuesday by winning that match, got them into the next round of the playoff as well. So they avoided round one in an extra match, and now they're drawn against Scotland and Austria, and I think they fancy their chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they've every reason to have confidence the way things have been going at the moment, and it would be great. It really would be great if they were able to find a result there and get into those playoffs. I think it would give the country a great lift. Are you podcasting this week?
Hopefully, Reggie, yeah. If I ever get out of Derry, I'm stuck here.
I wish I was back home in Derry, huh?
I'm trying to plan my way out of here now, but hopefully we will be back this week.
Tom Brady's wife's not happy, 45 years of age. He's back involved with the Tampa Bay Bugs this year. What's wrong with her?
Do you know what? I don't mean to get all Daily Mail about this whole thing. Do you know what? It is a fascinating story. I know sometimes we delve into the kind of the personal side of things and the kind of we talk a little bit about gossip. But it is pretty fascinating, Reggie, when you look at it, right? Here's a guy who's 45. He's nothing to prove. He's one of the most successful quarterbacks, if not the most successful in Super Bowl wins anyway. We could talk about stats another day. And you could actually get his career and you could chop it in two And if you broke that into two people, both of those guys would end up in, you know, first ballot Hall of Famers. So here he is, he retires. And he's spoken an awful lot over the years about how, you know, look, he's a supermodel wife and, you know, he seems to have it all. He's the most successful player ever. But he's spoken before about that personal life aspect, which I find interesting, where he has a supermodel wife, yet while he's off gallivanting doing his NFL stuff, she has to hold down the fort at home, like every married couple out there. So he eventually retired, Reg, and I think Gisele Bündchen, who's his wife, was thinking, brilliant, I have Tom at home now. He can take out the bins from time to time. But then he ended up unretiring after 2 months of going back, and apparently there is a bit of friction there. And it's just fascinating to see that sort of insight, because they had an interview with him with reporters, and he never showed up for training camp. And then he did arrive, and he looked different. And people were going, is it plastic surgery? Is it, like, what's going on? I just think he's old. I just think he's knackers, and he's getting on, and he's arguing at home because he's retired and unretired again. And he went on a podcast as well to say how there is friction at home because he's off playing again. It's fascinating to see. He's 45, which is unheard of for a quarterback in the NFL, especially at his level. And the Bucs are second favourites to win the Super Bowl as well. Mm. So just really interesting to see, you know, the most successful player of all time. But then there's sort of a little backstory behind all of that where he's really personable as well. And he's a Brady, so he's Irish. So,
Well, speaking of quarterbacks, new season, plenty of movement in that department. Big shake-up off-season. We're going to see different, like, established quarterbacks with different teams. Give us an idea of some of them.
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, usually when you have an experienced quarterback, because look, the quarterback, if you don't have a good quarterback, you're toast, you're pants, you're not going to get anywhere. You know, we've seen some exceptions to that rule, but that's why they stand out, because you need good quarterback play to get on in this league. Otherwise, you just fall apart. So usually what happens is when you have a really good experienced quarterback, he never hits the open market ever. But what we've seen this offseason, just like what you said there, there's some really experienced guys. Some of them look like they've gone off the boil. Some of them are really blockbuster moves, and some of them are really controversial. So Matt Ryan, who was with the Falcons for forever, he's now gone to the Colts. And then Russell Wilson, which is probably the biggest blockbuster move, he moved away from the Seahawks and has gone to the Broncos. Now, usually when you farm out an older quarterback like this, it's a bit dodge, you know. But we've seen Tom Brady have success. Aaron Rodgers, there's a lot of talk about him with the Packers. Would he retire? Would he go elsewhere? So it really is the aging quarterbacks market now. So with Russell Wilson going to the Broncos, it really is the end of an era with the Seahawks. But he's hooking up with a guy called Nathaniel Hackett, who came from the Packers. And he's seen as one of these sort of really brilliant offensive minds. So that will be exciting to watch. And then other moves around, you know, we've Joe Flacco, he's going to start for the Jets. People sort of remember him from the Ravens back in the day. Mitch Trubisky, who failed with the Bears, has gone to the Steelers because Big Ben has retired. And Baker Mayfield, lad, we've talked about Baker Mayfield and the Browns and their struggles over the years. And he got turfed out from the Browns because they signed Deshaun Watson on the biggest contract ever for a quarterback. And he's got so much controversy around him with all of those legal cases and stuff. So Baker Mayfield has now gone to the Panthers. And I think most of these quarterbacks play their old teams. So there's a lot of grudge matches this season as well, which will be exciting.
Yeah, Stephen, morning. It's Ken here. Just wondering about, you know, the concussion issues that have sort of marred the game over the last few years. Is there anything that they've sort of brought in for this season to try and alleviate that or ease it, or any new rules or different stuff to even the helmets or anything like that?
Not so much, but I tell you what, Ken, what was funny about it actually is that they've added these things in practice now. So they're always giving out about, you know, the game has gone too soft and, you know, they want to actually tackle and all this. But when they brought in the new collective bargaining agreement, which is, you know, what allows the players to do what they do and the owners do what they do to protect everybody, one of the rules that they brought in was these sort of padded, they're like little padded things that you put over the defensive players' helmets.
Yeah.
So they're running around looking like Mr. Blobby, you know, or it looks like a children's show or something. It doesn't look real. And apparently the defensive players were giving out about it. So it's another example of where they're trying to bring that concussion safety into the game. Now it's hit practices, so the defensive players can't even tackle properly, and the coaches are kind of giving out about it. But the minute the concussion issue gets brought up, Ken, they say, here, is this not in the best interest of the players? The coach is going to back off a little bit because they don't want to be seen about promoting violence. But yeah, it's another little funny quirk that they've after adding now.
I mean, there was something brought up that, you know, they should play without the helmets, and that would maybe, you know, sort of stop them going in for those tackles that a lot of the concussion is caused from the helmets alone. If they didn't play without helmets, it might be even better. Well,
Yeah, it's, do you know what? And Reggie would have massive experience there, obviously, with the rugby and stuff, and they have the skull caps and all that kind of thing. You know what? And the odd time I saw a tackle recently in college football where one of the helmets popped off and your man still went into contact, but they're so nervous about it because of the legal issues there.
Yeah.
The NFL, as we know, is a massive money game. So the minute they stand to lose from lawsuits, which they did with concussion, they're just going to keep doing this. So they keep changing the rules, Ken, where you can't lead with your head. Years ago, as a running back, you used to be able to drop your head and you used to be able to use your helmet as a weapon to butt the other player in the chest and knock him out of the way. But, that's long gone. And they actually want to do away with special teams where, you know, when you kick the ball off, so kickoffs and punts, they kind of want to do away with that. So where you end your fourth down is where the other team picks it up and stuff like that. So, I mean, we could see in the future where it gets even less entertaining on that side of the ball. They do not want high-speed collisions.
Yeah.
Well, there won't be any chance to take helmets away anyway because they'd have to lose the pads as well. Mm. And that's not going to happen because the game would just be... You couldn't change the tackle technique and basically generations of teaching how to tackle. It would be rugby, Ken.
If they took
away the helmets. So that's the bottom line on that. Look, the Packers, your beloved Packers, interesting to see in week five their match. They're going to have a match which is already sold out against the New York Giants in October in London.
Yeah, first time they come over. We were waiting for ages. Look, the group's been going for about a decade now. And one of the dreams we had was that to see the Packers play in London, which we thought would happen an awful lot earlier. And the other one was to bring people over to Green Bay. And we've been doing that now for a long time. So the last sort of chess piece to fall was this game in London. But the problem every single time was that the Packers would never give up a home game because it's too valuable to the society over there. I mean, they're in a really small town. And it's a religion over there. It's insanely popular. So the only game that they give away is an away game, but that always depended on the away team agreeing to it, and they never would because the Packers fans travel too good. The stadium's always sold out. The amount of money that they get for their local area is upwards of $8 million. So there's no way that they would have moved it, but it seems like they were sort of forced to move because they added an extra regular season game. So instead of 16, it's 17 now. And with that extra game or that bonus game, as it's being seen, the NFL can kind of force you to do things. And one of those things that they did with the Packers was the Packers had an additional home game. So what they did was they sort of said, right, you're going to London and they're coming over. Now, the Packers are happy to come here, but it was literally they could not accept that blowback from the locality if they were to make that decision themselves and move. So it's really exciting. Look, the tickets have sold out faster than any tickets ever. Of course, there's scalpers out there, lads, who are trying to charge people, you know, £1,200 for a ticket that cost them £100. It's absolutely scandalous stuff that's going on.
Ridiculous.
So us at UK Packers, what we're trying to do is get our hands on those tickets and raffle them off for charity or whatever. And
well, I've got 10 of them you can have for £1,200.
This is where Ken starts advertising tickets. No, but that's the thing. It's insane. The thing as well is that we waited so long for them to come over for one.
Mm.
And then also, we know the Packers are not going to move a home game over here if they can help it unless they're forced. So it's going to be an away game. But they've also broken it open in Germany where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady are going to play this year. So what we expect is that the Packers don't have to elect to move a home game for another 8 years. So this might not happen for at least 8 years because they're not going to elect to come over. No other team will. And even when they have to in 8 years' time, that game might go to Germany. So we might not see the Packers in London for about 2 decades now. And that's kind of, you know, what we're thinking and what's realistic here.
Mm.
So that's why the ticket sales have gone crazy because this might be the only time that some people get to see them in their lifetime, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, we know a lot of our listeners like to listen to your ACCA do it every week. So give us the ACCA for this week in your first week.
First week, it's always Dodge. But I've got a treble, which is good. So it's a 6-1, put a tenner down, get 70 back. So it's the Green Bay Packers versus the Minnesota Vikings. They go away to the Vikings, which is very tough to play in, but the spread on that's only -1.5, so they have to beat them by a field goal. The Baltimore Ravens coming up against the New York Jets. There's a spread there of -6.5. And then the Cincinnati Bengals then to go up against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And there's a -6.5 on that as well. So, you know, might have got away with one in week one.
Decent return. And if anybody was fancying an outright at this early stage, who might be a good bet?
Well, for the Super Bowl, we've got the Bills at 5-1, and they laid waste to the reigning Super Bowl champs, Rams, on Thursday, and they embarrassed them. I think it was 31-10. So they look like a very good shout. So they're 5-1. Otherwise, you've got the Bucks after that, then the Chiefs, the Packers, and the Chargers. My money's on the Packers, but of course, I'm UK Packers, so just don't listen to a word I say when I say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And overall, your feeling is that it's going to be a strong season where everything's fully back after COVID, all the interruptions, all the messing that was going on with that. So we should see a good, solid season of NFL.
Exactly. Full stadiums, loads of quarterbacks moves. There's a lot of people who should have got coaching jobs that did get coaching jobs. You know, you look at the Tampa Bay Bucs and stuff. So yeah, this is going to be an absolutely cracker of a season.
Okay, I'm delighted to be joined on the line now after a little bit of a summer break by the one and only Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well indeed. Glad to be getting ready and preparing for the rugby starting again next week. There's been plenty going on with the championship down under, some interesting results to say the least, but I suppose the URC is the one we'll be looking at, as well as the European Cup when that comes around. But before I get to that, we do have to mention, of course, the Ireland women's sevens team taking on New Zealand a little bit later on in that tournament. That'll be a bit of a tough one for them.
Massively, but they've made such a good start already that you'd have confidence in them in taking them to their scalp. You know, even just before I came on, I was just flicking around on Twitter and watching again Bevan Parsons' unbelievable try. I think it was against Brazil. It's already caught the imagination. She's such a good prospect. And there was a good push during the week ahead of this weekend, you know, getting behind the team. There's so many familiar faces, in particular in the women's team. That would be great to see them go and get a result, and then hopefully that can feed back into, I suppose, the growing groundswell of positivity around women's rugby in Ireland after a tough couple of years, and hopefully it can kick on into the 15s now going forward.
And what would you make of the 15s that we mentioned it with the tour to Japan and the results? You know, it started off well, but they still hit a bit of a stumbling block. What was learned from that tour, do you think?
I think there's a lot to learn on a number of fronts. It was the first time Ireland women's team had embarked on something like this. So there was always going to be, you know, growing pains or an eye-opener or two, in particular since it was such a young squad. You know, they brought so many fresh faces in. A lot of the senior players were with the sevens team, or a lot of the established names were with the sevens team, because they weren't involved. So it was always going to be tough to, you know, maybe get two victories. To even get such an impressive victory week one probably set a false sense of expectation, because there wasn't that much of a gap between the team. They were just very clinical on the day. And then likewise, from watching the second test, like, Ireland had a lot of chances that they didn't take. So even though it was quite an ugly scoreline, I think ultimately the teams are pretty even despite two lopsided games. I think they're going to get a huge amount from it, to be honest. And although maybe people would have expected two wins, it is a gradual process. Japan are going to the World Cup, Ireland are not. So there is a little bit of a gulf in that sense. So I think it was another step in the right direction. Even just getting their first ever tour under their belt, I think, is a really positive move.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, long may it continue. I think there's finally, as you said, some positivity around the women's game and the way it's being dealt with and the structures that have been put in place. Albeit not perfect yet and still a bit to go, but certainly going in the right direction. So we've got to give credit where credit is due. Okay, I have to talk to you initially about an announcement that came out during the week, which kind of raised my own eyebrows a little bit. I was kind of didn't really know what to make of it at first, and it was just the announcement that the URC have agreed a sponsorship deal with Qatar Airlines, and it was brought up in the news in the press conference about it. A number of reporters asking the question of, well, why? You know, I mean, this is a nation that there's been all sorts of questions about. It was deflected in the sense that they were trying to make out that it was Qatar Airlines, but the point was being made that, well, look, that's the same thing. So it's a bit of a strange one.
And it's interesting, like, Martin and I, the CEO of the URC, kind of went further and talked about the possibility of maybe hosting fixtures there in the future, potentially pre-season games or maybe further down the line, even a regular season game. And, you know, as you mentioned there, there's been question marks around Qatar and their human rights record and their stance on various issues. Obviously, with the World Cup going there in December, that's been under the microscope. And generally, kind of, these sorts of countries like Saudi Arabia as well with the Gulf has come under a lot of scrutiny. Yeah, it was very interesting and very polarizing during the week. Yeah, you know, he, as you mentioned there, he was kind of saying this was a great opportunity for the league. Qatar Airways, I think, are coming in, and the idea is that it's an interesting one, because rugby is crying out for going from hemisphere to hemisphere, but it's certainly something that has, it's an interesting one, because rugby is crying out for, you know, fresh investment, especially after COVID. Of all the sports that couldn't really afford to be behind closed doors for so long, rugby probably gets its the bulk of its finances from those crowds that were starved for 2 years. So they're obviously looking, you know, as much as they can to raise new revenue. Like, they've gotten an Indian tire company that no one's really heard of as the title sponsor, you know, so they're obviously trying to go to untap, like, you know, Qatar Airways as a sponsor and being backed by, like, I do think it's different having, like, you know, Qatar Airways as a sponsor and being backed by Qatar, like, say, the Golf League is with Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet, to be honest. I'm kind of on the humming and hawing about it. It is hard. It's expensive to fly around the world for a league. I don't know. What do you think, Reggie?
Well, I suppose there's a number of things that struck me straight away. I find it particular about Qatar or the sports and talk about, well, look, if you're going to be that particular about Qatar or nations that have got poor human rights records, then just look at any of the companies, the big companies that are sponsoring some of these events, and they have links to a lot of these places. There's links with Russian firms, there's links with Qatar firms, and they're basically the same thing. They're owned by, those companies are owned by those nations, and so you could argue that it's a backdoor way that the money is coming in anyway, you know? So you can make that point. And that is true across a huge variety of sports that you could delve into and look at. So I think it disguises it somewhat when you put it there as the airline, for example, as the sponsors. It does disguise it somewhat. But that being said, you look on the one hand and you see things like, we went through a period there in all sport, but also in rugby, where there was a lot of LGBT principles being brought out. There was rainbow flags everywhere. Every team was putting it up on their logo, and, you know, laces were being put into boots. And then you go with a country like that where, you know, you can be imprisoned for being gay. So yeah, there's all sorts of contradictions the whole way through this whole thing. So I think it was a poor move, personally. I think it could have been, you know, there are plenty of other sponsors out there that in the current climate you could have gone after, and it would have been better for the sport in general. I think that would have been a better way to go about it. And then I have to ask the question, well, where is this actually leading to? As you mentioned, they're talking about having pre-season games over there. So it's not just a case of picking an airline and picking a sponsor. There's definitely thought down the line of, well, we can hold games there. It's halfway between the North and Southern Hemisphere. South African teams coming up to play there. You know, we can build and grow our audience. But ultimately, it comes down to money, Will, you know, and that's the bottom line. It's just going to be about who pays the bigger bills. And it's a pity that rugby is now going down that road.
Yeah, because as you say, you know, there could be other airlines, but you know yourself, Qatar probably are able to come in, and Qatar Airways with like 3 or 4 times maybe what an ordinary airline might be able to offer. And likewise, like the biggest pockets these days are these kind of oil-rich kind of, you know, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Abu Dhabi, like these, you know, you see it in sports around the world, like, you know, Newcastle, Man City, PSG, they're the teams with the biggest pockets. So, like, it is an interesting one. And one thing that I thought was poor was how Martin and I kind of answered it or spun it. Or it was all about, like, oh, we think it's a good opportunity to spread rugby's values in Qatar. And it's, I think people see through that. Like,
yeah,
it was rubbish.
Yeah. It was like McDowell and the rest of them coming out about the Live Tour and talking about, you know, oh, it's good for the game, we want to spread the game. Everybody would have respected it a lot more if they had to come out as Smith did and Werner came out and said, no, we're doing this for the money, lads. You know, it's $100 million. I ain't turning that down. It's for my family. It's for my future. I think Cameron Smith and those guys and Werner got a lot more respect for coming out and actually saying that. You're right. The answer that came out of the URC, Martin, that was, you know, just, I don't think he'd even thought about it. He just kind of came out with like that. I mean, are you honestly trying to tell me about values going across? That's going to change what we've seen there? No, I don't think so. Another interesting point, Will, would be the players themselves. I'd love to know. I haven't had a chance to talk to any of them, but I'd love to know how they're feeling about it. Do they even care, you know? But you'd have to say, in recent times, we've had a number of players coming out and trying to... Nick McCarthy.
Yeah, Nick. Nick McCarthy came out, you know, was it over the summer, and it was a nice moment. He got a humongous positive reception. The league itself, which I saw a lot of people note, the league itself sent a tweet congratulating him, and then, as you mentioned, get into kind of bed with Qatar. But the players, I suppose, you know, it's one of those things that it's above their pay grade, really, isn't it? Like, they don't really have it, unlike the golfers who can pick and choose who and where they play and who they play with and for, the players are contracted. They can't really, and even the IRFU, the IRFU have won, I think, 1/7 of the vote, you know, between CBC and the other union. So even, it's interesting, you know, even if the IRFU didn't really want to go down that road, can they even really do much about it if the other unions are all gung-ho for it? I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying, you know, hypothetically. So, yeah, you're right. Like, it will be interesting if the players are asked about it or if Nick McCarthy is up for an interview at some stage, what's his stance on it? Because, yeah, as you just mentioned, it's full of contradictions. Like, sport these days is just full of contradictions with all these things, with preaching one thing, taking money from another. It's a bit of a minefield.
Absolutely, it is, very much so, and we all appreciate how much it costs to run sport, get all of that, but, you know, there's public image as well, and there's what it means, and I don't know. Look, it's complicated, but I'm not a fan of it. That's all I'll say. I'm not a fan of it. But speaking of cash problems, you go across the water and you look at the Premiership, and it's in all sorts of trouble over there. I saw the report last week and how much debt all of those clubs are in, and they're all seemingly muddling their way through it, but it's a mess over there, the debt in rugby.
Yeah, one thing on the debt report, I did see a couple of clubs push back on that on social media, like the CEO of Harlequins and the CEO of one of the other major clubs, I can't remember which one off the top of my head, did say this is inaccurate, we actually have this or that financially. But obviously the Worcester Warriors situation, they are playing today against London Irish. I think they owe the tax man, you know, a pretty sizable amount of money. The owners are trying to sell the club to someone who can maybe come in and kind of take on that burden. I think Wasps have had some issues of late, and even before COVID, the English model financially wasn't working. Exeter, I think, were the only team making money who made a profit. Everyone else was making losses every year. And then obviously COVID has absolutely decimated. You know, as I mentioned earlier, like the crowds are unlike Premier League soccer or other sports where the TV money is what drives it. In rugby, the TV deals has never been as astronomical. It's really the match-going punters who are the lifeblood. And even I saw a report like the two games last night were postponed until today because of the death of the Queen. Like, that's apparently cost Bristol £200,000 for having to move it and all, and like, you know, reorganization of staff and whatnot. I know they were, Pat Lam and Bristol were apparently fuming with that decision because of that money implication. And it's in a very precarious position. It's funny because the league itself is kind of thriving. It's a really interesting and exciting product. But as you mentioned, financially, it looks like it's built on a bit of a house of cards. And if Worcester go, you know, kind of like when the first bank went back in the day in America and it's kind of started a domino effect, you would wonder what would happen then.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, well, at home here, the URC kicks off next week. A lot to look forward to. Having looked at the summer signings, the training, the build-up to this year's, Leinster would be obvious team out in front there. But Munster are looking strong as well. They've made some good signings and they seem to be making some good noise down there. A couple of injury concerns. And then we've got a cracker with Ulster and Connacht taking each other on in the first game as well. How do you see it? Who's your fancies this year?
I'd be lying if I didn't think Leinster would probably win it overall. You know, I thought that last year they got turned over in the semi-finals. I think they'll be really gunning for it this year. You know, someone like Will Connors coming back into the mix, I think, you know, could be huge. I just think they'll be hurting after last year. Interestingly, like, it will be, you know, someone like Johnny Sexton probably won't play much in the URC. They have a real kind of quandary at out half about what they do and who they turn the team over to. Obviously, Kieran Frawley in the summer made a pretty strong impression at out half against the Maori. That's kind of one of the early season storylines I'm fascinated to see. In particular, like, who starts against Zebre week one? Is it Ross Byrne? Is it Kieran Frawley? Is it Harry Byrne? It'll give us an indication, perhaps, about what direction they might go in. So Leinster, in terms of early storylines, that's probably one I'm looking at. But you mentioned Munster there. That probably is the most interesting one, just with their new coaching staff, Graham Rowntree, going into the head coach position. And funnily enough, just listening to Andrew Conway, he was speaking at the launch of the league there last week. He was kind of putting forward, a kind of picture similar to when Andy Farrell came in from Joe Schmidt, who was quite a stern character, Johan van Graan, quite a stern character. And the first thing Andy Farrell did was kind of loosen it up a little bit, kind of take some of the pressure off and kind of make it a more relaxed environment, a more collaborative environment. And what Conway was saying is Roundtree's kind of taking it from the same book. Like, they were called, like, Conway was calling him by his nickname. He was like, wig this, wig that, and, you know, he was calling all the coaches by the nicknames in the interview. It seems like it's loosened up a notch, and within that, Mike Prendergast coming in as the backs coach is obviously, you know, he's the key appointment, really, isn't he? He's come from Racing 92, he's a Munster man. Unlocking that attack, that potential and attack, will go a long way towards ending this trophy crisis. So yeah, Munster would, for me, would probably the most interesting storyline heading into the season, just with the amount of change they've had in the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think there are great changes this year. I'm really looking forward to see what Munster do. I do think Prendergast is a great appointment there, and obviously I played against Graham many times. I know him well. He's a good man, he's a good coach. I think now that he's in that position, you know, although he hasn't got the experience, I think he'll do a good job down there. And I feel Munster could have a very good season this year, because they had a pretty decent season against the odds last year in many ways. So, like, I think they'll move on from that this year. So it'll be interesting to see. You mentioned Joe Schmidt there as part of the chat they're talking about. I just thought, I'll finish now with you on the rugby championship. I just thought it was amazing. You know, the week before last, we were saying this is the end of New Zealand. They're on the way out. Argentina are top of the league, and what's going on? And blah, blah, blah. Foster out. And then they win a game. They're back up top of that championship again. They're 2 points clear of the other three teams. But I just thought that image of what we saw with Joe Schmidt going to shake the hand and being snubbed, so openly snubbed in that coach's box, was very telling last week.
Yeah, it's been a bonkers rugby championship, hasn't it? The narrative is flipped on its head every week, especially New Zealand have gone loss, win, and each time, like, the sky's been falling, they're back to their best and vice versa. They're in a very funny place for me. I mean, it's funny, I remember I was on with you and it was at the end of the first test. I was taking the call during the end of the first test when New Zealand were ramping home, and even then you asked me, do I think this New Zealand team could win a World Cup, and I said no, because I didn't think the players were there, and I still think that. I couldn't believe it after they beat South Africa, their first win in however long, and then that was the moment they nailed their colours to the mast. I just thought it was so premature and such a short-sighted decision. It was one win and they were like, this is our guy, we're back. And the weekend after, they lost to Argentina and they backed themselves into a corner. Then they couldn't really then turn around. It seems from a top to bottom thing, I wouldn't put it all on Ian Foster either. It seems like they've just been run very poorly. They've kind of lost their position as kind of the thought leaders in the game. The players certainly aren't there, but Ian Foster obviously didn't surround himself with a top quality coaching staff to maybe offset that. You'd have to say Joe Schmidt, you presume, will make a big impact. I think they'd be much better off if he was actually coaching the team. But obviously, as you mentioned there, what's the friction like? Joe is not a number two. There was a couple of times he had the opportunity to go into the line setup, I think, as like maybe Gatland's assistant, and he was like, thank you, but no, thank you. Now he's obviously gone in as a number two. And for me, he's not suited to it. He's too smart. He's too kind of his way, I feel like, to fit in as a number two at this stage of his career. So I am fascinated to see what that's like. Kind of like when, you know, you played under Warren Gatland and Eddie O'Sullivan was maybe a number two at that stage. Was he maybe too big to be a number two or too headstrong? I don't know if that'll work here. And Declan Kidney then went in as a number two under Eddie, and did that work? Does two head coaches really work? I don't know. It's an interesting one.
It feels to me like Joe Schmidt is the overseer who's been brought in to watch everything that's going on and put some changes in place. And the body language said to me that, you know, it just felt to me that these were coaches who felt they were being watched and that somebody had come in to try and usurp them, and that, you know, Big Brother was here and here he comes now coming in to try and shake hands. No, you're not part of our team. You're the enemy. That's what it felt like. And maybe I'm overreading it, but it certainly looked that way to me. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking also, that might be a mistake, lads. You know, you don't want to make the enemies, certainly not an enemy of Joe Schmidt. So whether or not that'll come back to bite them in time, only time will tell. But look, we could talk about that for a lot longer. I don't have any more time, Will, but maybe next week we get into it a little bit more again.
Thanks, Reggie.
It it's Declan Drake on GAA in the company of the great Ballantyr St. John's clubman Sean Lane this morning. A very good morning to you, Sean. Welcome back.
Morning, Declan. How are you?
Ah, sure. Listen, fantastic. Great weekend of hurling to look forward to. But the headlines this week, the Senior Football Championship last eight pairings are known. In hurling, that will be the case after the final group games this afternoon. In ladies football, we will have new champions in Dublin in 2022. The defending 7-in-a-row champions, Foxrock Cabinteely, were beaten during the week. We'll have all the details on that. And a little teaser for you as well this morning. What is the latest connection between St. Bridget's GAA club and Meath football? I wonder if Sean Lane know the answer to that.
Are you talking about Bridget's now in Roscommon or Bridget's here in Blanchardstown, Declan?
Well, this is Dublin's talking sport, okay. Sean. So
that's me rightly put back in my
Russell
box.
Park.
I honestly don't know.
Okay, well, the answer to that is Shane Supple, the former St. Bridget's netminder who has been appointed goalkeeping coach to Meath under Colm O'Rourke for next year. Okay. And of course, Shane will be well known to League of Ireland soccer fans as well, because of course he played with Bohemians for a couple of seasons and indeed won an FA Intermediate Cup medal with Crumlin United. We must throw that in as well. So the best of luck to Shane in his new gig, and also the best of luck, it must be said, to Lee Gannon as well of Whitehall Columbkill, because what a fantastic debut season he had. And he has been nominated for the Young Player of the Year and indeed an All-Star Award as well in the GAA GPA Awards, which are coming up at the end of next month. And Sean, disappointing year overall, I suppose, for Dublin football, but one shining light was Lee Gannon, who you will of course know well from his underage hurling days.
Yeah, he made a huge contribution to the under-20s when he was there, when the team that went to the All-Ireland final. He was brilliant playing the half-forward line, but I have to say he made a huge contribution at cornerback for Dublin this year, and we're always looking for new players in the football, so well deserved, and a terrible nice fella.
Yep, absolutely. Well done to Lee, and the best of luck when the awards do come up. But the Go Ahead Dublin won Senior Football Championship now last weekend, and the quarterfinal lineup was confirmed. The four games will take place next weekend at Parnell Park over Saturday and Sunday, and we'll have a complete preview of them here on the programme next Saturday morning. But defending champions Kilmacud Crokes, they had Paul Mannion in outstanding form alongside new recruit Shane Walsh last week. They play in the second of Saturday's doubleheader at county headquarters against Coola from 7 p.m. Before that, a real north side derby thriller in prospect between Nafina and near neighbours Whitehall Columbkill as they go head to head for a last four place. That one gets underway at 5:15. Then to Sunday, the last eight action gets underway with the Southside meeting of Ballyboden St Enda's and Ballantyre St John's from 2:15. And then the Cross Liffey derby of Castleknock and Thomas Davis. That one set for a 4 o'clock start. So tremendous freshness to this year's Senior One Championship, it must be said. No Ballymun Kickhams, no St Jude's amongst others. Coola and your own Ballantyre St John's back in the big time in senior football, Sean.
Yeah, it's 2003 were the last time Kilmacud beat us in a semi-final, and it's a long, long time to wait. But there's Chris O'Grady, Collie O'Donnell, Darren Chambers, the chairman, put huge work into underage football over the last 5 or 6 years. Will Ballantyre beat Ballyboden? I'm not too sure they will, but I can tell you one thing, they'll give them one hell of a fright and one hell of a game, and I wouldn't be surprised if they come out the right side of it.
Yeah, Crokes, I suppose, still very much the favourites as Shane Walsh continues to get up to speed. Came off the bench last week, but the Paul Mannion form last week, absolutely outstanding. I think it was 9 points he kicked, and again, just what Dublin are missing, but that's an argument for another day, I suppose. Now to ladies football, and as mentioned a little bit earlier on, we will have new county queens in 2022, because the 7-in-a-row champions Foxrock Cabinteely, they lost their final group game to the intermediate queens St Sylvester's 1-9 to 11 points during the week. It means that they miss out on a place in the last four. So Sills, who include of course former Dublin skipper Sinead Ahern and Nicole Owens amongst other in their ranks, will play Kilmacud Crokes in the last four next Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock. That's in Park de Burka, a home game for Crokes there, at the reward for making it 4 from 4 in their group last week. The other semi-final is out on the Moby Road. This promises to be another fantastic contest between Nafina, the Group B winners, and Thomas Davis, who came through Group A with 3 wins from their 4 starts. That one throwing in at 7:30. More about that next week. And just a final link to the ladies and something coming up today. Nipper McNally, of course, is the boss of Foxrock Cabinteely, and it's a big day for St Anne's out in Borna Breena today too, because the Joe McNally Invitational Sevens is taking place out there. So the best of luck to all the teams taking part in that particular competition, and no better man to have it in honour of the great Joe McNally as well. Okay, so it's time to turn to hurling now, and a little bit behind the football championship, but they'll catch up today because the knockout stages will become, or the teams in the knockout stages will become known. Two winners will qualify for the semi-finals and two losers into the relegation playoff and quarterfinals spots up for grabs too, so plenty to play for. And it doesn't get much bigger, I don't think, Sean, with respect to the other teams left in the competition, than Ballyboden, St Enda's and Coola from 6:30. A host of county titles between them over the last 15 years or so. Some of the finest games in the county have been played between these two. Should be no different today.
No, Declan, I think they've won 12 out of the last 15, with Crokes winning the other three in the last 15 years. Ballyboden and Coola, a fantastic game to look forward, and there's quite a few good games. But the county board couldn't have asked for much more. I mean, the four games that are left on the last day, two teams go straight into the semi-finals and two other teams go out of the competition. So they're like four knockout games in the last round of the round robins. And that's the beauty of having the new structure of 10 games in it. In relation to Bowden and Coola, you know, if the Coola team will say that played Plunkett's the first day, come out, Ballyboden will wipe the floor with them. But Coola are steadily improving. They still have the Keane and the Conn O'Callaghan, the Sean Moran. Mark Shute is coming back to a fair bit of form. They've introduced Liam Murphy, one of the lads that were on the under 20 team as well. So Coola are improving. Jake Malone, they're still in the middle of the park, and you know they're going reasonably well. But look at on the other side, Ballyboden, you know, under Dave Corton, Aidan Mellett, James Madden, Paul Ryan still doing it. Like, they're going to be awful hard beaten, but this is going to be one cracker of a game. And you know, both teams will want to go straight into the semi-final and perhaps go down the country and have a game or two while the quarter-final is going on, you know, just to prep themselves for a really big semi-final.
You're a firm believer in taking the quickest route, the shortest route, which is to qualify for the semi-finals.
I am, Declan, and you know, some people say, no, the extra game is great, but if you lose this game, you could end up playing Bridget's or Vincent's or Crokes. If Vincent's beat Crokes today, like, that's a game you mightn't want. I mean, you could go down and play the Village or play St Anne's in Wexford or whoever you want that's prepared for maybe a Leinster Championship and play a 70-minute game or a 75-minute game and play 25 or 26 of your squad and give everybody a run. That's probably better preparation than having a top-class quarter-final where you can't make mistakes and you won't learn from it, but you'll have to get across the line. So, I'd much prefer to go the shorter route.
Okay, well, our county champions are, of course, Kilmacud Crokes. Their quest for two in a row continues at Parnell Park against St Vincent's. Is it 1993 since they won the county championship last in senior hurling? Seems a long time.
It is, Declan, and like, when you go look at the Roll of Honour in hurling, Fogs have 31, but Vincent's are second there at 13. But, you know, 1993, and you won't like this statistic, the last time they won it, they beat Crumlin in the final. Crumlin were beaten in two finals in a row, 93 and 94, because Coola beat them as well. Liam Martin was the manager of the Crumlin team at that time, a fantastic stalwart for Dublin hurling. But, yeah, it is. And you know, the one thing, you know, after 15 years, they didn't realise it in Vincent's that it was 15 years that since they won it. But it's nearly 30 now, and it's on the top of everybody's tongue. They realise it's well overdue. They've won a load of two or three club All-Irelands in football since they won the last senior hurling championship. So the Conor Burkes and the John Hetherington's and the Alda McBride brothers, Rian McBride in particular, you know, they're very aware that this is a game that they really have to perform. I saw them on the TV the last day against the Crave. Now, look, Declan, they played really well, but they didn't finish well. They left about 2-6 after them, at least between freeze and play. If they performed that day today against Crokes, that's not going to, you know, cut it. They'll need to be far more efficient, but they are good. That, you know, will they beat Crokes today? It might be a little bit of a bridge too far for them, but at the same time, you know, I wouldn't rule out a big result here for Vincent's. As we said, the winner of that game goes straight to the semi-final. Crokes still have huge firepower with the Ronan Hayes, the Oisin O'Rourkes, Alec Considine's, Caelan Conway's. These are marvellous stick workers, and the ground is still going to suit them. They're missing a few from last year, but Crokes are the team to beat. There is no doubt about that. But, you know, I'd give Vincent's a little bit of a chance, a fair chance today.
OK, we're going to go just have a quick look at the other two games before we move on to the go-ahead. Motorhead Senior Camogie Championship, which has a big day tomorrow. Na Fianna taking on Oliver Plunkett's own Rua at O'Toole Park. The significance of this one? A win for Na Fianna?
Yeah, if Na Fianna win, they're in the quarterfinal, but also if Plunkett's win, they're in the quarterfinal and Na Fianna go out. So this is the second game where you'd have to say it's a nail biter. On form, you'd just about give it to Na Fianna, but you know, Na Fianna lost their two games to Bowden and Coolah, so too did Plunkett's. Plunkett's have worked very hard. Keane Bowl and Niall Arthur, very, very hard to hold. I just think in this one that, you know, the Liam Rushes and the Donal Burke in particular, and we might mention Donal got a nomination for an All-Star in the hurling as well, so congrats to him. I just think Na Fianna will have a little bit too much for him. But the one thing we've learned in this championship, that Plunkett's, you know, are worthy of a place at the top table, and, you know, let's see how they get on.
Yeah, indeed, congratulations to Donal. I think it's the second consecutive year. Yeah. Indeed, he's been nominated for that All-Star award. Now, the other game you said you were looking forward to particularly was the clash of Lucan and St. Bridget's, that Cross Liffey game at O'Toole Park. Why that one in particular?
That one in particular is Johnny McGurk would have been, I would have played against Johnny myself when I was finishing up and he was starting, and he was a feisty little fellow when he was 17 or 18, and he hasn't changed. I just love watching him on the line in knockout games, and this is a knockout game, Declan. This is, you know, they're on 4 points, Lucan are on, and Bridget's are on 5 points. The loser goes out here and will end up with in a relegation. I just think that Lucan won the league, Division 1, first time ever. I think they got caught the very first day out against Vincent's, you know, and it's after bringing Vincent's on. But it's put Lucan in an awful position here because they've lost the Crokes as well. They need to win to go through. If Bridget's draw or win, they're through. You know, the McCaffreys and Chris and Paul Crummy and Kieran Dowling, they'll really have to perform out of their skin to get one over Alan Nolan and Keane O'Sullivan and these guys. That's going to be a belter. And the contrast in how they play as well. Bridges will carry the ball off the shoulder. Lucan will be far more direct. But that's going to be an absolute belter of a game. And the fact that one goes out, this will go right down to the wire. Can't wait for that game.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Great stuff indeed. So O'Toole Park and Parnell Park today, the places to be. It's hard to decide really where to go, to be honest with you. I think Bowden and Coolah, obviously a very attractive game at one side of the city, and as you say, Lucan and Bridget's on the other side. But best of luck to all the teams remaining in the particular competition. Now, Sean, finally today to Camogie, the go-ahead senior championship is getting very, very interesting, and it will tomorrow. Parknave Inchin in the morning, St. Vincent's taking on St. Jude's. That's a repeat of last year's final, of course. The Southsiders winning on that particular occasion. Won a county double last year because their junior footballers won not only the county title but went on to the All-Ireland title as well. Can Vincent's turn the tables tomorrow and claim a precious championship win in this one?
I think Vincent's will win this one, Declan. I've looked at the table and Vincent's have played two and won the two. I was actually expecting, and I was following it, that Jude's were the same, but they weren't. They only drew the first day out in Lucan. Hannah Hegarty and the Gannon sisters and Faye McCarthy, the goalie, they're really going to have to play out of their skin tomorrow. The game, is, as you said, and quite rightly, is in Vincent's, and I think that gives them a small competitive advantage there. Jude's just seem to have this magical formula that they kind of just get through, and then they start performing out of their skin in semi-finals and finals. But they're of huge danger here, if I can just mention the other game. Lucan are at home to Plunkett's. Now, Plunkett's just unfortunately haven't had a great season. They've been well beaten and everything. But if Vincent's beat Jude's tomorrow, it's not a foregone conclusion that Jude's go through. Lucan could go through on goal average if they give Plunkett's a right hiding. And, you know, it could happen, but I just expect Vincent's to win tomorrow, but I expect Jude's to go through with them.
I love this time of year in some respects. You know, it's knockout camogie, knockout hurling football. It's fantastic. But you know, when it comes into permutations and calculators and score difference, you need to win by so many points. And what's happening in the other game? Yeah. No, thanks. Just leave leave me alone. It's just not me.
And it's just it's worth mentioning on the other side of the draw, which is perceived not to be as strong as the Vincent's Jude's game. But you have a smashing game there. My old friend and foe, Declan Feeney, managing the Na Fianna senior camogie team. They're at home to Castleknock, who have been the team of the championship as far as I'm concerned.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.